Radio MD.
RadioMD.com.
This is Healthy Children, brought to you by the American Academy of Pediatrics on RadioMD.com. Here's Melanie Cole, MS.
Over the past 10 years, a number of new contraceptive methods have become available. The American Academy of Pediatrics continues to review and update its recommendations on contraceptive methods to provide pediatricians with the information they need in order to counsel and prescribe contraception for adolescents. My guest today is Dr. Mary Ott. She's an associate professor of pediatrics and adolescent medicine in the section of adolescent medicine at Indiana University School of Medicine. Welcome to the show, Dr. Ott. Let's talk about this recommendation on teen pregnancy prevention, and what are we recommending now? Because there's some new contraceptives out there that were not available when you and I were children or adolescents.
So thanks for having me on the show. The biggest change between the last time the guidelines were issued in 2007 and our most recent guidelines is our recommendation that pediatricians have families consider long-acting reversible contraceptives or LARCs as their first-line method for teens who choose not to be abstinent and are for pregnancy. LARCs include the intrauterine device and the contraceptive implant, and these are long-acting methods that don't require a young person to do anything once a day or once a week to maintain the effectiveness of the method.
So they are relatively safe hormone-wise. How effective are they? How well do they work?
LARCs are our most effective forms of contraception. They are what we would consider over 99% effective. So among women using young women using LARCs, less than 1% would become pregnant across the year. And this compares starkly to not using any methods at all, where 85% of young women have the chance of becoming pregnant across a year when they use no methods.
Do you like one over the other? Do you like an IUD better than other forms of birth control? Are there certain risks you want us to be aware of?
So birth control needs to be personalized to the young person and the young person's health needs and needs for contraception. I personally don't have a preference of one over the other. I really make sure we individualize it to the young person, what they're comfortable with, and they all have sort of different side effects in terms of how they affect menstrual bleeding, and they're all slightly different, so I let the young person and the family choose.
Confidentiality-wise, this is a sensitive topic to discuss with our children, to have the doctor discuss with us, you know, and this also involves parental involvement. What do you want parents to know about, you know, are these confidential? Can teens get them without us knowing? Do we want that? You know, give us a little background on that.
So confidentiality in a teen visit is the doctor, if something's confidential, the teen gives the doctor would need the teen's permission to share the information. So it has to do with information sharing. Teens are in a funny place. For little kids, nothing at all is confidential, and when you turn 18, everything is confidential. And for teenagers, certain things are confidential, like STD testing and diagnosis, and contraceptive use, which means that the doctor doesn't share without the teen's permission. Confidentiality doesn't mean secrecy, and pediatricians actually encourage young people to talk with their parents and encourage parents to talk with their young people about contraception. The other important
thing about... That's great. No, I'm glad you mentioned that confidentiality does not mean secrecy, and that we have to keep those lines of communication open with our teens so that we know what's going on with them. Go on, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, and I would the one other thing that I would say with respect to confidentiality that confidentiality helps young people. It improves access to physicians. If young people know that care is confidential, they're more likely to seek physician's assistance, go to a clinic, talk to their pediatrician about contraception, so it increases safety for the young person. So confidential care helps them.
I think it probably also increases their confidence in their doctor so that they're willing to be honest about their, you know, sexuality and the things that they might, their sexual behaviors. Here's the big question, Dr. Ott, that every parent wants to know. If we discuss contraception with our children and we discussing it with the pediatrician, does that open the door and say, go ahead and have sex?
Absolutely not. I've been working in adolescent medicine for 15 years. My prescribing, teens have sex for a variety of reasons. Usually it's a relationship reason. They want to feel closer to that person. Sometimes they're interested to understand what sex is like. It is not my giving them contraceptives. My giving them contraceptives is just keeping them safe. So it's not something kids aren't more likely to have sex after receiving a contraceptive from a physician. The other thing that's important is that the Academy recommends that pediatricians speak first to young people about abstinence, and then if the young person chooses not to be abstinent, to make sure that they're using an effective contraceptive. So we recognize the importance of abstinence, and young people can understand complicated messages. They can understand that the pediatrician wants them to delay having sex, but if the young person chooses to have sex, the pediatrician wants them to be safe.
Is the birth control implant different than the IUD?
Yes.
So what are the differences?
The implant has a little bit of a type of hormone called progestin in it, and it releases it slowly over 3 years. It's a tiny, flexible rod about the size of a matchstick that a provider places in the young woman's upper arm just underneath her skin. It is extremely low dose, so it tends to have a better side effect profile than some of the other hormonal contraceptives that we use. There are two broad types of IUDs that we use right now. Both of them are small T-shaped plastic devices that are smaller than the palm of your hand. One of them has a little bit of natural copper and no hormone in it, and that lasts 10 years. The other one has a small amount of levonorgestrel, a progesterone hormone, and that lasts either 3 years or 5 years, depending on the specific device that you get. So the IUD can have hormone or not have hormone. The implant has a small amount of hormone in it.
If we're talking about, you know, children, young adults 18 and over, and they use one of these, the implant or the IUD, and then 5-7 years down the line, they get married, they want to have children, is there any risk to that? I know parents listening that want grandchildren, but at a little bit later time, you know, want to know, is there a risk for fertility with these?
All of these methods are reversible and don't significantly affect young people's fertility. And in fact, they can all be removed and fertility will return after the device is removed. So parents don't need to worry about fertility issues with these. They're entirely reversible. The other important point about safety is, like, these are all medications or medical devices, so they do have side effects and there can be complications. But I always remind young people and their parents that all contraceptive methods are safer than pregnancy, and there are fewer complications with any contraceptive method than there would be with a pregnancy. So if you're thinking about safety for a young person at risk of becoming pregnant, any of the contraceptive methods are safer.
Dr. Ott, 30 seconds, your best advice on the AAP updated recommendations on teen pregnancy prevention.
I would encourage parents to talk to their pediatricians about, if their daughters need contraception, to talk with their pediatrician about these LARCs, these long-acting reversible methods, as our most effective tool in preventing teen pregnancy.
Absolutely important information, and keeping those lines of communication open, parents, with your teen and adolescent is also key. Getting them to trust the pediatrician so that they're honest with both you and the pediatrician goes a long way in helping them to learn about these different things. This is Melanie Call. You're listening to Healthy Children right here on the award-winning Radio MD. Thanks so much for listening, and stay well.